This episode of Startup Stories is brought to you by our friends at Pure Scooters. Save time, save money, and save the planet with an electric scooter from Pure Scooters, the UK's most trusted electric scooter provider. Stay tuned to the end of this show to learn how you can win one of two electric scooters we're giving away in partnership with Pure Scooters.
The web is changing everything. What would you do if you created an app that your customers loved but that threatened your own business? Demos Demetriou had a successful niche recruitment business providing staff for the most demanding customers, but he began to see that the recruitment industry has to change. I'm Jeremy Parsons from MagicSubscriptions.com, and today, in Startup Stories with Adam Callow, you'll hear how Demos decided whether to follow his head or his heart, whether to take a step towards turning his own industry upside down, even if that meant putting his own core business at risk.
Demos, firstly, a huge thank you for giving up your time today. For the listeners of the show, could you just give an introduction to who you are and, I guess, spend 2 minutes talking about the Marlin app and what it does? And then we can dig into how you've literally cannibalized your own business and potentially risked putting yourself out of business with your own product.
Well, Adam, thank you firstly for inviting me onto the show. It's great to be here. I'm founder. My name is Demos, and I'm founder of the Marlin app, which is an app that actually connects employers directly with job seekers. So exactly as you say, we have cannibalized our own agency by taking middlemen out of the equation. The Marlin app allows employers to search through profiles that we've pre-verified and contact them directly for opportunities and have a chat about, you know, what opportunities those employers have.
Like it. Let's go back to 2013. You had a physical bricks and mortar space. And if we fast forward to today, you're solely a technology company, aren't you?
Correct. Yes.
Cool. Just walk me back through the thought process in terms of what you guys were going through in 2013 and how, the original versions of the app came about.
So in 2013, we started as a recruitment agency supplying domestic household staff for large houses in London and internationally. We were doing that. And as the years went by, the market did start to change. As naturally as most markets, there was competition, and ultimately employers were questioning fees from not just our agency, but many agencies, because obviously an agency bringing value to sort of the candidate and the employer, with the connection that everybody has with, you know, online, has become more and more difficult. Now, in 2008, fast forward to 2018, still through our recruitment agency, we had a request from a household in London looking for a large number of staff. Now, as most recruitment agencies would do, we were contacting a number of staff to see whether they were available for this particular opportunity. As part of that process, one of the things that, you know, we're a small team, and one of the things that we questioned was, yeah, this is a really really mundane task of contacting candidates to see if they're available, them sending an updated CV, us sending them a job description, and just going through that process time and time again. So we said, well, let's sort of develop an app that we can use internally so we can communicate with candidates to talk about the opportunity. They can see our latest job so they can apply instead of having to keep sending their CVs in. That worked really well. And for about 6 months, we had candidates registering. Feedback from them was fantastic, that they didn't have to upload a CV every time and keep applying, and they could chat with us at any time. And then we had the realization of, well, you know, if employers had access to this, to these candidates that we have already registered, then they would, you know, they can contact them themselves. Yes, there's a little bit more onus on them, but what we have found over the years is that ultimately, you know, people hire people, and the quicker we can get the employers in direct contact with job seekers, the better, because as an agency in the middle, you know, it's a third party, so often things that maybe an employer hasn't said about the role, or a job seeker hasn't said about their, you know, their current situation, often comes out in a conversation between the two. And then, you know, fast forwarding really to now, and we've just gone down the route of, at the end of the day, the industry does have to change because recruitment agencies, you know, and the model is a very old business model. And the app, in our opinion, is the future, you know, connecting employers directly to job seekers. It streamlines the whole process. It saves a lot of time and it's cost effective for employers.
I love that. And everything you said makes complete sense. Sort of logically, I guess emotionally is what I want to go into, because you've got bricks and mortar presence and that's all got its own cost. Like when you launch this app and then you have those internal thoughts about, actually, there's probably a better business to be had here. Like, who had that idea within the team? And then how was that actually internally communicated? Because that's a really brave step. Was it a black and white transition, or was it, let's run two businesses side by side and see if this thing has some legs?
So originally the idea came from me. As I'm sure you know, you get the ideas at some funny moments. You know, standing in the shower one morning thinking to myself, well, you know, hang on a second here. If employers had access to this, what would this do to our business? And you start running everything through. So when I first came into the office and said it to the team, they were like, you know, you crazy? You know, ultimately you're going to destroy the agency by doing this. And then we spoke it through a lot more, and we went down the route of, as you say, you know, let's keep the bricks and mortar business there for now. And let's talk to employers as well and see what employers think, because ultimately we know that the job seekers like the idea, but are the employers going to like the idea? And we started to do that. We spoke to employers that we had maybe done business with previously, and people that we hadn't done any business with at all. Maybe that they didn't want to use an agency because of fees or something previously. And the feedback in general was very, very good. They could see that there was a real need for it. So we were running the two together from the beginning, at the beginning rather, and then gradually the bricks and mortar business has slowed down.
A quick question on the feedback. As a business over here, we do lots of focus groups and insights and try and collect feedback from users. And asking for feedback is one thing, but sort of validating it and sort of getting someone to put their money where their mouth is another thing. How did you actually find out if what they were saying was valid and to prove the model out, compared to they were just being nice to you because you're on the phone with them or they're in person? Like, how do you qualify feedback in this situation?
That is a very, very good question. And I mean, what we tried to do in the early days was, certainly when we had the first versions of the app, was to get those same employers who gave us the feedback to actually sign them up for a trial. And that's the thing that we've been focusing on the last 6 months, is just to get employers on board on a trial basis, just to actually communicate with candidates and really change the way that they look at employment, and maybe have this as an additional tool to everything else that they're doing. So ultimately, the validation of that question has been from employers coming on board after those questions and using it and coming back to us to say, yeah, we like it. We'd love to see this as a feature or that as a feature. The majority of the feedback that we get, because obviously we're still at early stages with the app in terms of candidates. I mean, we've got thousands of candidates on there, but in a lot of cases for an employer who's maybe in a remote part of the UK or somewhere international, there just isn't the candidate base. And a lot of the feedback that we get is, as soon as you have a larger candidate base, we will be, you know, we will be a subscriber with you for sure.
Makes complete sense. And I made three notes about the from what you just said, and I really want to try and dig into all three in this conversation. So I'm going to try and be concise from my side. Is when you rolled this model out, this app, as an additional service, how did you think about pricing this? Did you see it as a lower price point option, but you would class yourself as the consultant layer that sits on top as the premium? Or is this a more premium service down to speed? Like, how did you think about the pricing internally when you were testing this out?
Well, originally, because of the clients that we used to deal with before, we were dealing with the ultra high net worth market originally. So traditionally, there was a lot of work that was involved in going out and headhunting headhunting staff.
And can you just share what the normal fee structure like in the more traditional bricks and mortar model, so we can kind of compare apples to apples in terms of what you do now?
Absolutely. So traditionally, we would have charged anywhere between 15 and 20% of an annual salary, the first year's annual salary, on the traditional model. And as a subscription model on the app, we were looking to not just bring the cost down for those types of clients, but make those same candidates that we were dealing with more accessible to smaller households and other businesses, because ultimately we're looking at other sectors as well. So bringing that down to, originally we were looking at pricing, having like a 1 month access, so they could just, if they were hiring just for one member of staff, let's say, and they knew they were going to hire them within the next 30 days, access to that would cost them just under £300. If they committed for a longer term, then that was going to be just under £100 if that was like a 12-month commitment.
And was sorry to interrupt, was that access regardless of success? It's, you've got 30 days, go and hunt, or is it 30 days, £300? If you're successful, you pay £300?
No, £300 go and hunt, and obviously every day that more candidates are joining, you have access to those as well.
I like that.
But what we've since done since that time, having the two sort of pricing models, in our opinion, makes it, it confuses it a little bit. So what we've done now is we've just said £150 a month. They can have access for a month or, you know, 3 months. If it's a longer term, if it's going to be 12 months, we would look to normally discount that. But we're having these conversations with employers more on a personal basis now, because obviously it's smaller scale.
And I guess that sort of segues nicely onto the next item on the list for me mentally is, as you bring new people on, so I've run a marketplace business in the past, and we're sort of stepping back into doing a marketplace business here at Expert Trade right now, which is matching homeowners with trades professionals. And 6 years ago, when we first tried it, we had all the supply side. We had every plumber, electrician, heating engineer, you name it, but we didn't have any homeowners using the system. The only thing that we had is it was free. So we could sort of buy ourselves time. I guess with you, if someone's paying £150 a month and they can't find a candidate, how are you balancing this traditional marketplace chicken and egg problem? And I guess the expectations of your customers when they come on board.
So right now, we've done the same thing in that we're providing it mainly for free, certainly on a 7-day trial or a 30-day trial with some employers. For us, the sort of the financial side of it isn't really in the picture yet, because we just want to build the community at this stage. We want the employers to talk to those candidates that have already registered, to talk about opportunities. Ideally, they do hire them, but in a lot of cases, even if it's just the communication between the two parties, so that, you know, candidates can feel that they can trust the platform, that there are going to be opportunities in the future. So that's what we're more focused on rather than the actual financial element of it right now. Obviously, as both sides start to increase, then the financial side will come into it.
Okay, makes sense. And from a platform perspective, are you guys looking at becoming purely just a platform play, or is there still some level of vetting or verifying of the people that apply on both sides of this marketplace that you go through? I'm trying to work out, once you've built the technology, what's the extra secret sauce or the value on top of that that the Marlin app offers?
Well, at the moment, we're talking with employers to see what kind of additional features, you know, they would like as a service. And at the moment, it's a little bit of a mixed response, because it depends on the size of a business or a household that is using the app. If they have the resources, they just want access to the platform as it is, just to get names and to be able to contact candidates directly. If you go to a smaller team, some of them maybe want some extra reference checking. We may even add some form of interviewing process at a later date, but these are like value-added services that we see as a bolt-on really to a subscription at a later date. But what those exact services are going to be, it's very difficult to start at this stage, because, as I say, it's quite a mixed bag of responses that we get from the employers.
To be honest, I guess you just really answered it for me, in terms of your team has all the experience from doing the bricks and mortar side, whereas if you dumped 3-5 really smart techies, I'm just going to say, in a room. They could probably build the technology, but they wouldn't have the insight and the relationships that you have. I guess your real USP is you've done the bricks and mortar business, and you are literally putting yourself out of business with your own product. So that's the real value that you drive. And I guess to talk about techies in terms of the development of this, how did you manage that? So originally it was an internal app for you guys to use just for your own candidates to streamline, I guess, your own efficiencies. Was that done externally, internally? And then moving forward, because you're a technology company now, have you thought about bringing that in-house?
Okay, so I originally studied software engineering at university. I did actually drop out after the second year to pursue my IT business at the time. And didn't really use much of that software engineering learning in those years until now. So originally I started it just to develop a prototype, thinking that looking at the tools that are out there, develop a prototype that we could then take to a developer and say, okay, this is what we're looking at. These are the screenshots. Can you make this work? And I just got more and more involved in it until I actually got a proper working prototype. And then it just got more and more and more. Now, ultimately, we obviously need to bring in developers. We're at the stage now where we're thinking about investment, some seed funding, so we can pull in developers, but we want to develop it all in-house, because the one massive advantage that we have had, yes, we're a small team, but the fact that I've been able to develop it with the team is that, you know, we could be talking today about a feature that we want to add into it. By tomorrow afternoon, you know, it could be in and it's in, you know, submitted to the store. And right, if we had that as an external team, I think those changes would take a little longer. And I don't think it wouldn't have the same effect.
No, I agree. I mean, when I first built AF, so I know a little bit about tech. That makes me dangerous because I think I know more than I do. So I actually hired an agency up in Sheffield to help me build our first platform. And I guess two things happened to me is one, every feature request has a large price tag on it. And you really have to think about, it could be good practice, but you really have to think about what you build. But also an external agency just builds the feature as you've outlined, black and white. Whereas because you're physically doing the work now, you know how it relates to the whole product, the app, and how the candidates and how the employees on both sides are going to interact with it. So nothing gets lost in translation. Really cool. One thing you just said is, there's a misunderstanding on my side. I actually thought you raised some funding. So in terms of how you're rolling this out and bootstrapping it right now, how is that being funded, out of curiosity? And tell me if I'm being too bloody nosy, but is it the bricks and mortar side of business is still generating income, or how's that working?
No, you're not being nosy at all. It's a good question. So originally it was the bricks and mortar business that was funding it. And then since then it's been personally funded, friends and family, borrowings, things like that, until we get to, seed funding, really.
And I guess the thing that I'll probably get shot from the listeners if I don't ask the question is, what milestone are you trying to get to before you think you're ready for seed funding? And then what's the process that you're going to try and follow to get that done?
Well, actually what happened was when we started the employer side of the app, and we developed it and we started to talk to employers, we had this vision of probably naively actually that, okay, we've built it now. We've had some great feedback. It's installed, ready to download. Let's go out and start talking to some investors. We're looking to raise some money. We've got the product. We've done our pitch decks. This should be not easy, but you know, we have a product. Looking at a lot of other sort of ventures that are out there, maybe they've got a white paper of an idea and some research and stuff. So this should be a lot easier. But as I'm sure listeners that may have gone out and looked for funding previously, you know, it's not actually a very easy process. And one of the stumbling blocks that we've come across a couple of stumbling blocks, and the two major ones are, the first one is you're not looking for enough money. It needs to be a much bigger deal. And when it is a bigger deal, come back to us and talk to us. Whether that's a polite way of saying, we just don't want to invest, is yet to be seen, but we'll obviously be contacting those people at a later date to see. And the second element of that is being revenue generating. Our focus hasn't been on the revenue as such, but obviously that plays a big part for raising money. So 2 months ago, we took the decision to say, let's put the investment side of things. It's there still in the background. We're having conversations with people, but that's not the main focus now. Our main focus is to get as many employers as we can on board, ideally paying for it. And then let's go back to those sort of investment routes and see if we can, if raising the money is going to become easier that way.
From a marketplace perspective, you just mentioned about going to those employers, and this is again just me being curious. That's one of the reasons I love this show, is because I can just be nosy and speak to interesting people like yourself and learn. How are you approaching, I guess from the employer side, you've got all the relationships, or a lot of them. How do you go about finding and recruiting new candidates? Like, how are you building that side, the supply side of your business right now?
So the supply side until now has been that we had an initial head start, obviously, because we had some candidates on board from our bricks and mortar business. And since then, it's been they can share in the app as well to other candidates, which has helped, and also social media. But we haven't done any major marketing, and that's part of the investment that we're looking to secure, is to go out and market it to really build up the supplier side.
Yeah, I guess you're in a really interesting point now where they want to be able to see. And is it seed or VC money that you're looking for?
Seed money.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Okay. You'll hear, I know you've recently subscribed to the Startup Diary. You'll hear some of the, I class myself as being on the VC treadmill. I think I've made a lot of mistakes raising cash. So I've gone from bootstrap to seed to a bit of venture capital. There's probably a beer to be had in the near future when you start to go down that channel. One last thing from me, not a last thing, but one thing that I really want to make sure I get on the mics is, as I sort of looked into the business, how do you think or feel about the fact that there's a lot of incumbents in the space? There's a lot of big companies in, I'm just going to say, the traditional job matching space. How do you stop them from turning what you do on as a feature, or feel about them turning it on as a feature, as a risk to the business?
I don't really see that as a huge risk, if I'm honest with you, because at the end of the day, their sort of business model is very, very different to ours. And I think the only way that we'd see something like that as a threat is if they really changed the business model completely. Because as a great example, you know, as an agency, we had an office. We had an office because we needed to meet with candidates. They were coming in regularly for interviews, things like that. Yeah, we're a tech business now. We all work remotely. We've saved a massive cost there. Other sort of big businesses that are going to look at this space and say, well, let's just add that as a feature. I think that's going to be almost like that's not going to be the real deal, you know?
In terms of the next sort of 3 to 5 years for the business, mm-hmm. Where do you see this going? Like, how quickly does this thing accelerate? And then I guess once you've sort of defined who you are, where do you want to, where, I guess what I'm trying to work out is, where do you take this business to? How big can this business get?
Well, to give you an idea, the recruitment industry as a whole in 2016 generated £425 billion in revenue internationally. So it is a huge market. Obviously, lots of businesses, large and small, hire staff. Now, we started in the private household staff side because that's where our bricks and mortar business was. But there's a big overlap with hospitality as well. So hotels, restaurants, and that's our first area that we're concentrating on, that sector. But ultimately, as the years go by, we're looking to go into as many sectors as possible, because we see this as an app that, you know, a retail shop owner could say, you know, I'm looking for some staff, be it temporary, be it permanent, access the app, contact the people that he wants to, you know, he or she wants to interview. Going to the other end of the scale, a large corporation who maybe already use recruitment agencies, maybe advertise on job boards, and this is an additional tool that they have to get access to candidates. And then just going sector by sector where we feel there is a real need for the app.
I like it. I think it's a no-brainer in terms of you're playing in a really, really big market. And I think probably the thing that excites me most about when we jumped on the mics is the move that you've taken is it's not four tech guys, girls, whatever, jumping into a room to build a product because they can see it working. It's people that have been in the industry, done the bricks and mortar, and then cannibalized their own business. So I think that's like the moat around what you guys build. So I'm super excited to follow along with the journey. I guess
thank you very much.
One last question for me, and I always want to try and ask this and hope to get the most genuine answer, is what actually keeps you up at night right now when it comes to the business? Like, what's the thing that you are most concerned about?
I think the biggest concern that we have, that I have, that does keep me awake, and it does wake, you know, it does wake me up in a cold sweat sometimes as well. And that is, that is what we're doing. There is no doubt that the market does need to change. There's no doubt about that. Are we too early? We're definitely not too late, that's for sure, because certainly in our sector, we are the first mover in our sector. So it's just, how quickly will the market move, and will it be as big as we hope it will be? So it's just that, as I said, not doubt as such, because it isn't a doubt, but it's just, I think somebody recently said, you know, you've got that thing of dipping your toes in the water first to see, you know, is this a credible market? And then we're sort of coming along and we're just diving in, you know, to say, right, yeah, we're just getting rid of the bricks and mortar business. Let's just go for it.
I love that.
We're halfway across the pond now. Now, I'm an optimist, and, you know, I'm really all in on this. And it's a case of, you know, we have to swim to the other end. But there is always just that little voice inside that says, you know, are you on the right path? Is there something there that, you know, you've maybe missed or something like that?
So I think from an analogy perspective, I love that. I mean, you probably heard it, that being an entrepreneur is like jumping off a cliff and building the plane on the way down.
I
really echo with that. The thing that I heard from what you said, and it's exactly the same with me, and it has been for the last 3 to 4 years, is I'm in the construction industry. It's very antiquated, very old, and everyone in this industry tries to be the best of a bad bunch. So we're very slow, and I'm kind of like, it always comes down to timing. Like, I know what we're building is right, but you always kind of go, it's right, but is it right now, or is it going to be in two?
Exactly the same thing. Exactly.
And to be honest, we didn't operate get the traction that we wanted to in the first couple of years. But I think it's because, and that was really disheartening for me, but we sort of plugged away at it, because you hear so many stories of sort of like 0 to 10 million in this sort of, and you sort of get caught up in the startup Silicon Valley ecosystem. And I guess the only thing for me is, it really feels like your industry is needs a change. And just stay the course. It feels like you're so self-aware in terms of what you're building, but like, just stay the course, because it might be now, it might be 3 years time, but I think we're both playing in a really big market. And I genuinely wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you very much. You're very kind.
No, not a problem. Listen, this is the bit of the show where we wrap up with some fast fire questions. And I love the fact that you haven't been sent them ahead of time. Are you ready to tackle them?
I am indeed, yeah.
Cool. Let's get into it. So number one is, what is the one thing you know now that you wish you could tell the 18-year-old version of yourself?
Be patient.
Like it. Yes. Yeah. That's my biggest problem with these questions. I always want to follow up with them, but I've got to try and stick to Jeremy's orders, which is rattle through these. So the second one is, what is the number one tool, service, or hack that you use to get work done that our listeners may never have heard of?
I'm sure a few of them would have heard of it, but Slack.
Big fan of Slack. And how do you, I guess because you're a remote team, aren't you? Use it all.
Yes, a load, yeah.
And just out of curiosity, you're currently doing the development. I'm super keen to work at. Do you work with any agencies or freelancers at this point in time? Is it all in-house?
It's all in-house at the moment, but we do have a couple of freelancers that, you know, I do get in touch with if I've got some questions.
I'm always trying to work out how, this is selfishly just going on a tangent, how people work with freelancers or agencies and then bring them into Slack channels. If that's a bit over the top or not, I'm trying to find people that do that really well. So I'll report back when I find them. The next one is, what is the best piece of advice you've been given and who gave it to you?
Oh, the best piece of advice that I've been given. I've been given lots and lots of advice over the years. that's for sure. I'd probably say my dad, actually. And the piece of advice that he's given, again, I say he's given me a lot of advice. And that is really, you know, not to give up with a lot of this stuff as well. And he's been a great role model over the years as well. So it really is not to give up.
Love that. Just out of curiosity, what did your dad do, or what did he do?
Yeah, he's actually in the textile industry.
Cool. And what does he think about you cannibalizing your own business?
He thinks it's a great idea, the actual app itself. And as many people have that initial feeling of really, is that the right way to go? But then the more he has thought about it as well, you know, the market has to change.
Like it. What is the... I'm going to reword this because we keep telling ourselves we need to reword this question. If you weren't doing what you were doing now, what other business would you start?
Wow. What other business would I start? Well, I tell you one of the things that I found through this whole journey, and not just with this business, with other businesses that I've been involved in, and that is, you know, having some advice, somebody that you could, you know, call upon when you either have doubts or if you're looking to raise money or things like that. That is something that I would certainly have thought I could have got into, if not now, certainly at a later date, to just help other startup founders out there through this whole process. Because as you know, it's a pretty tough industry.
Tough and bloody lonely. I'm a solo founder.
Absolutely.
Like having a network of people to sort of have as a sounding board, just to shoot the shit with and just say, like, is this crazy? Like, does anyone else feel like this? It can be absolutely invaluable.
Exactly.
If you recommend one book or podcast, what is it?
Well, podcast-wise, I've got to say, listening to The Startup Diary has been fantastic. I did say at the sort of beginning of the show, I think what you guys are doing is really good because it gives startup owners a real feel for what goes on. So that's a great podcast. Podcasting wise, I like NPR. I've listened to a lot of the founders that go onto there as well. Quite inspirational. Books wise, I personally like biographies. Most recently, I had an interesting read of The Hardest Thing About Hard Things from Ben Horowitz.
Yeah, really good book. I enjoyed that. Did you read it or listen to it?
I read it, actually.
I only say that because I think it's in the audio, but like in between chapters, he drops, I wasn't expecting it, he drops some like some proper gangster rap in between stuff. I really think an amazing book if anyone hasn't heard that or read that yet. I think most importantly, because it just sets the tone of what it's like to run a business. And when things are going mental and there's fires everywhere, it's normal. It happens. Who has had the largest impact on your life?
The largest impact on my life would be my son.
How old is your son?
He's 12.
Have you got just one kid or?
Just the one, yeah. Yeah.
Love that. And I'm going to follow up with this because I'm a father of two. I've got a 5 and a 3-year-old. When I asked you that question, you went to your son, why?
Well, I think, you know, as an adult, when you have children, as you know, you really do change your outlook about a lot of things change. Prior to having my son, certainly in the business world, you know, I had a different mindset. I was hungry, as I'm hungry now in business, but it's why going back to the initial question you said to me, you know, what would you say to your younger self about patience? And I was a little bit impatient with things, with different businesses that I was involved in. And I think it just children just change your mindset, you know. It's a massive change.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. I think for me, it's like pre-children, you're focused and hungry, and then after kids, it's like you go up a gear, but you feel like it's for a completely different reason. Like it's not about you at that point. And that
exactly
was that,
right.
That was my flip, and that was like that gave me all the energy to sort of just crack on through hard times.
Definitely.
Last one for me is, what is the number one piece of advice that you give to first-time founders?
So it would be just, you know, get started. And you know, a lot of startup founders who maybe haven't done it before worry about failure. You know, it's like, what's going to happen if I put my money into this and I lose it, or it just doesn't work out? But you know, in my opinion, what's worse is not actually starting at all, because you'll never know. I mean, if you do something and you do fail, the one thing you're going to learn is a lot of lessons. And really, no matter how much you lose, those lessons are well worth it. So it's definitely to start and really not give up and keep changing things. If one business fails, start something else. Don't give up.
Love that. I think as you were talking, I thought, completely agree. Regret is the thing that I just don't want to have when I'm 75 years old. Like that's my fear. Like I watched a Ryan Serhant vlog and he's got a picture of his 80-year-old self in his office. And he's like, I work for that guy to make sure that guy isn't pissed off with me when I get there. So I
love it.
I really like that. Dimos, listen, I hugely appreciate your time today. And honestly, I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. For anyone that could benefit from the Marlin app, where do they go to learn about it?
So they can go to www.marlinapp.com. We've got all about the app there. I also publish a weekly personal blog as well, talking all about our journey. I'm on week number 14 I'm writing at the moment, just talking about everything that's going on in the app, the struggles, the highs, the lows, and everything in between.
Absolutely love it. So I advise everyone that listens to this should go and read that to start with, because it's definitely the right audience. And if you think you can benefit from the Marlin app, guys, go check it out. And I guess very last thing for me, Dimos, is have you made a podcast yet?
No.
If you're writing this blog, even if you have a podcast and you just read it, I strongly advise you do that, because I've thoroughly enjoyed speaking to you and I know that other people will benefit from your journey. My ask off the back of this is record the shows and get it into the podcast store and let other people enjoy it too.
I'll certainly look into it for sure.
Any questions, you know where we are.
Definitely.
Don't be a stranger.
Likewise.
Speak to you soon, buddy. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Adam.
Thanks for listening to this Startup Story. We aim to bring you first-hand stories every week, and you can help us out by rating the show on your podcast provider or head to nbs.fm where you can sign up for sneak previews and more. If you have an idea for a guest for Adam with a startup story to tell, you can email jeremy@nbs.fm. In the next episode, Adam talks to a leading startup CTO and learns the secret of how to make product development care, really care, about customers. If you're working on a tech project or using technology to innovate in any industry from food to flight to fashion, the next interview is just for you. So make sure you've subscribed to Startup Stories from nbs.fm and I'll see you next time.
Hey guys, thanks for sticking around to the end of this episode of the Startup Stories, sponsored by our friends over at Pure Scooters. Save time, save money, and save the planet with an electric scooter from Pure Scooters. Now it's your opportunity to win one of two scooters.
Now Adam, this sounds awfully familiar to me. What was the closing date of the competition?
So it was the 17th of July. But you've reminded me that that was the last episode of the season and the closing date was meant to be the 17th of August. You see, this is what happens when you leave me to my own devices and I record an advert on my own.
So that means, guys, that you've still got time to enter the competition and win one of two free scooters from Pure Scooters.
And we've made entering super simple. Head over to pure.nbs.fm. That's pure.nbs.fm to enter to win one of these two scooters that we're giving away on the 17th of August. We're going to do a live prize draw within our Facebook group. If you're not a member yet, head over to Startup Diary Club on Facebook so you can watch the live prize draw. In case you miss it, don't worry. We will be releasing an episode to announce the winners.
And thanks again to our friends over at Pure Scooters for sponsoring Startup Stories.